Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
My home is not on this earth, not in this world.
Well, good evening, everyone. Great to see you all here this evening. Great to be here as well. Just want to start by asking, just shout out, you don't need to put your hands up. What's the best holiday you've ever been on? Best holiday you've ever been on. Name the place, yeah?
Cancun,
yeah, Mexico. Yeah, anyone else?
Corsica.
Yes, an island in the Mediterranean, is that right? Yeah, am I? Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Cambodia. This is a well-traveled family here, yeah?
Wow.
Yeah?
Hong Kong.
Gosh, wow, yeah. Anyone else? Yeah, Reese? West Coast of America. I went there and it was fantastic. Yeah, I agree. That was a great great holiday. Now, for me, now I am genuinely not just saying this because I work for a church, but like for me, the best holiday I've ever been on was when 5 years ago, and my wife and I, we went to Israel. And I know you kind of expect like a church pastor to say that, yeah, Israel's great, Jerusalem and all that. But no, genuinely, it was awesome. It was so good. And one of the places, you know, we did all the Bible sites and everything and went to Jerusalem and all that. But one of the places we went to was a place called Masada, okay? And we've got a picture of it here, okay? It's like this castle on top of a mountain in the middle of a desert in southern Israel. Now, getting to it, we got this bus to it, and we get the bus to it. And driving along to this place, Masada, we looked out the window, and there's nothing. There is just completely barren. No trees, no grass, nothing to provide any sustenance. Now, Bear Grylls would probably disagree because he could think, oh, well, I'm sure there's some beetle you can eat or something. But look, to me, I was like, look, there's nothing there. This is complete desert. And maybe like me, some of you have driven through a desert on your holidays, maybe in your nice air-conditioned car or in a nice air-conditioned bus. But most of us, well, have never had to have lived in a desert for any length of time. But I know for some of us, our lives at times can sometimes feel a little bit like a desert. Now, perhaps for some of us here, you know, you think back maybe to when you became a Christian and, you know, you experienced this sense of peace and joy and you were like, oh, this is fantastic, this new kind of life, and you had a new kind of sense of purpose in life, and you discovered this new genuine love in your church community. You know, things were great. And maybe for you, like when you first became a Christian, it was like, oh, awesome, yes. But that was then, and this is now. And perhaps now you're maybe thinking, look, I don't know, I didn't intend to be single for this long. Perhaps you're thinking, look, I didn't feel like I'd have this little money, or I'd be struggling to make ends meet. Maybe for you, you're thinking, look, I didn't feel like I'd have these health problems, or that my child or my mom or my dad would have these health problems for such a long time. Maybe you're thinking, look, I didn't think I'd still be struggling with anxiety and depression. And you know, sometimes life can feel like we're going through the desert. And so this morning, what I want to do is I want to talk about how to journey through the desert. Now, for some of us, we're kind of thinking, Andy, I don't really want to journey through the desert. I want to get out of the desert, okay? But I'm not going to talk about how to get out of the desert. I'm going to talk about how to journey through it. And the passage we're going to look at this evening is Exodus chapter 15 to 16. Great passage to look at when it comes to journeying through the desert, because it's a passage about people actually journeying through a desert. So it's the Israelites. They're journeying through the desert. They've a little bit of background. So the Israelites have just got out of Egypt. They had the 10 plagues and everything. And Pharaoh eventually lets the Israelites go. And they leave Egypt and they're pretty euphoric. They're like, yes, great. Slavery has ended. We're free. And then they walk and then they face this big body of water, the Red Sea. And they're like, okay, how do we get across this? And the Egyptians are now chasing us. What do we do, Moses? And Moses prays to the Lord. The Lord parts the Red Sea. They walk through on dry ground. The sea goes back together after them. And they've got to the other side. God's rescued them. He's brought them, delivered this fantastic miracle and brought them through the Red Sea. So they're buzzing. They're absolutely buzzing. God's come through for us. We've got this amazing miracle. And then they begin to journey into the desert. All right, and then that's where we pick up the story this evening in Exodus chapter 15, verses 22. And I'm just going to read through the passage. I'm going to throw in a little bit of explanation throughout as well, but we're going to read from Exodus chapter 15, verse 22 to 16:36. Starts off. This is immediately after they've gone through the Red Sea. says this. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter. That is why the place is called Marah, okay? So it's not unusual for desert waters to become so full of mineral salts that they're undrinkable, which seems to be the case here. And it's kind of cruel. You're going 3 days without water, and then you find water, and you're like, yes! And then it's like, oh, we can't drink it. Like, it's almost like worse, isn't it? So verse 24 continues. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, what are we to drink? Then Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. He threw it into the water, and the water became fit to drink. So they drink some water. Hooray. Then they move on to a place called Elim, which has 12 springs, so loads of water, 70 palm trees, so I'm assuming they had a good time there. And then they enter a place called the Desert of Sin, which we can see on this map here, which is just down here, the wilderness or Desert of Sin. Now, I don't know, it's kind of in the name. You're not expecting good things to happen there, really, are you? And good things don't happen there. So they move into this Desert of Sin, and when they get into it, they start to grumble, right? They start to really grumble. Now, I'll be honest with the Israelites. I can empathize. I mean, I remember when I went to that desert in Masada, I said to Elizabeth, I was like, I don't know what temperature it is, but this is the hottest place I've ever been to in my life. Like, I could not imagine being there for 3 days, never mind 3 days without water. So I can empathize with these Israelites. I think we give them a bit of a hard time sometimes. And they start grumbling to Moses, and they start saying stuff like this. Oh, if only we were back in Egypt. Oh, if we were in Egypt, we had pots of meat to eat. We had food. Oh, we had water. Oh, why couldn't we just be back in Egypt now? So they start grumbling to Moses and saying stuff like, oh, why have you brought us here, Moses? Come on. They completely forget about God's great miracle of bringing them through the Red Sea. And then in chapter 16, in verses 4 to 5, we see God's response to their grumbling. It says this, then the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. And then verse 5 continues, on the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days. So Moses then goes back to the people and he relays this to the people, tells them this, God's heard your grumbling, he's going to provide you meat and bread. And the people are like, hurrah, great, fantastic. So he gathers all the people together, and then the glory of the Lord appears in a cloud before them. Now, it's kind of hard to get your heads around what that kind of would have been like, but that's what happened, and that's what's said here. So that happens. And then in verses 11 to 16 in chapter 16, the Lord said to Moses, verse 12 actually, says, I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. Verse 13. That evening, quail, which is a type of bird, came and covered the camp. So they must have like flown over and just dropped. And they're just there on the floor. And then in the morning, there was a layer also of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, what is it? For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, it is the bread the Lord has given to you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Everyone is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer, which is, we reckon, about 1.4 kilograms, which is quite a lot, actually. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent. So they went out and they gathered the manna, as Moses said, and some eager beavers gathered loads, and others who were a bit lazy didn't gather so much. But when they weighed it, everyone got just what they needed. It got just what they needed. Some people decided to set up a manna savings account, and they decided to keep some for the next day. So they gathered some to keep over for the next day. And then the next morning, their manna that they decided to keep for the next day just filled with maggots. It had gone sour, gone bad, smelled, stank. Now Moses was pretty peeved at this, okay? He was pretty peeved at this because they were told not to do that, but they did. They disobeyed. But basically what happened, each day the people gathered what they needed, but then on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. Now, the community leaders came and told Moses, look, the people have done this. They've gathered twice as much on the sixth day. And in verses 23 to 31, Moses said to them, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it until morning. Verse 24. So they saved it until morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink or get maggots in it. Verse 25. Eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you're to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out. So the people rested on the seventh day. The people of Israel called the bread manna. It was like white coriander seed and tasted like wafers made with honey. Sounds quite nice. I wouldn't mind some manna. Now this was their daily routine. This became their daily routine for the next 40 years that they spent in the desert. This was their daily routine for the next 40 years they spent in the desert. Now, there's lots we can learn from this passage about how to journey through the desert, both physically and spiritually. Now, for the physical lessons of how to journey through the desert, watch a Bear Grylls program, okay? He'll tell you everything you need to know. He'll, you know, you don't need to come to church for that. It's like basically bring enough water, bring a map, bring a compass. That's pretty much the physical things you need to know about traveling through a desert. But this evening, I want to show us here two spiritual lessons we can learn from this passage about how to journey through the barren times we often experience in our lives, the spiritual deserts that we can often face. And the first thing we learn from this passage about journeying through the desert is real simply to feed on what God provides. To feed on what God provides. I know that sounds really simple, and it is, really. Feed on what God provides. Now, I have a little 2.5-year-old boy. He's called Max. Max, if you know him, you'll see him. He's a chunky little boy. He loves his food. And Max lives by a principle in life. He always eats what is provided. Okay, whatever is put on the table in front of him, even if it's not really food, he will eat it or attempt to eat it. And this principle of Max was really tested about three or four months ago. It was my wife's 30th birthday, and we had a big party. We had loads of people over. It was the summertime, and it was kind of a garden party. And Max was sat with like 4 or 5 other kind of people at our kind of picnic table. And there was an Afghan guy who came to our party. One of the guys goes to our church, and he brought some really, really spicy kebabs, okay? Like the kind of kebabs that would make any, like an adult's eyes water. And he came and he set these kebabs on the table that Max was sitting at. So Max's principle, you eat what is set in front of you, was tested. So Max grabs one of these kebabs, takes one, immediately just takes a massive mouthful, right? Takes his kebab and he's chomping away on this kebab. And we're all there being like, oh my goodness, this is not going to go well. So we're looking at him and someone comes over to me and says, Andy, I just want to let you know your son is just taking a massive mouthful of kebab. You know, expecting me to be like, all right, okay. So I was like, Max, we need to take that out. Max, he's like, no, get away from me. And so he's like, starts chewing. And you can see him, his face starts to go red. And he starts to sweat. And I'm like, Max, right, we're going to take that out. He's like, get away from me. And he goes, get away. And he keeps chewing. He's like, and he starts to kind of cry a little bit. And the face goes red. And the sweat is coming off him. And eventually, after about 10, 20 seconds, he just eventually goes, ah! And he swallowed it, and he's done, and he's kind of shaking, but he was like, he's eating it. He was going to eat it. It was not going to be taken out of his mouth. That was his principle, okay? And that was his principle. He always ate what was provided for him, and it's kind of a similar principle that the Israelites live by here. Like, God provides for them. Now, they didn't just look at what he provided. They didn't just poke it with a stick and think, what is that? So we'll do some scientific investigations on it. No, they took hold of what God provided and they ate it. Okay, they ate it and they lived on it. And that's a really simple thing, but it's a really simple thing that we need to learn to feed on what God provides. Now, what's really interesting is that in John chapter 6, Jesus actually talks about this passage in Exodus we've just read. And he tells people the same thing, that they need to feed on what God provides. But he throws in a little bit of a twist. Basically what happens is this group of people come and ask Jesus, okay, what must we do to do the works God requires? Okay, what do we need to do to do stuff that pleases God? And in verse 29 of John chapter 6, Jesus answered, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. So then they come back to him. They say, they ask him, okay, what sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? And then verse 31, it says, they say, our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Jesus said to them, very truly I tell you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Sir, they said to Jesus, always give us this bread. Then Jesus declared, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. So what Jesus is saying here is that what God provides us to feed on now is no longer manna, but it's him. That's what he provides for us now. Jesus is saying here that he is the one who sustains us in the desert. We're to feed on him in a kind of mysterious, mystical, spiritual way. We're to feed on him. So basically, we've got a choice whenever life gets tough. Either we give up, we want to die or go back to Egypt, or we choose to be sustained by Jesus, to grasp hold of him and to feed on him. And it's not just a one-time thing. You know, we need to do that every day, or else it can go maggoty or sour, just like the manna did. And you know, I don't know you guys, but I'm just going to say this as a general thing about, you know, people who are in church, so I'm not going to go or anything. But some of us can go an entire week between Sundays without ever giving Jesus a second thought. And then we wonder why we feel spiritually dry. And you know, God has provided us his word. He has sent Jesus to die on the cross for us so we can come into a relationship with him, so we can talk to him, so we can listen to him, we can spend time with him. So let's feed on what he has provided. So that's the first thing that helps us journey through the desert, to feed on what God provides. The second thing, and this is a two-point sermon, so this is the last point. The second thing we need to do is is to rest in him. Feed on what he provides and rest in him. Now, this passage is the first time the Sabbath is introduced in the Bible. In chapter 16, verse 23, which we read, it says, Moses said to the people, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Now, Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which means to cease, to stop work, or to rest. So it's basically about having a 24-hour period each week where we cease working. Now, when we practice Sabbath, what we're doing is something more than just stopping working. We're releasing control of our lives and trusting in God. That's what we're doing when we practice Sabbath. Now, the reason many of us often don't practice Sabbath and overwork is because we don't trust that God will look after things if we lay them down for a day. So we keep working so we can stay in control. And that's what the Israelites did when they looked for manna on the Sabbath. They didn't trust him enough to rest in him. And I know for me, like I struggle with this personally. Like I struggle sometimes to take a day off, to take a Sabbath. You know, I'll be like, right, I need to text this person. I need to sort this thing out. I need to get this thing sorted. And I was thinking, like, why is that? Why do I do that? And then I thought, well, it's because I'm busy. And I was like, well, no, I don't think so. Yes, I am busy. Yes, I've got lots of stuff to do. But just as I thought about this week, I realized that that's not the real reason why I do it. The real reason why I often don't take a Sabbath and text people and do things on it is because there's always this pull in my life to find my security in life, from doing well in my job rather than in Jesus. And like, I know you're all looking at me thinking, well, you work for the church, Andy. Same principle applies. Like, same principle applies. Okay? It's not like one thing. I don't work for the church, but I have this tendency to like find my identity in what I do rather than in Jesus. Okay? Sabbath is the way to counteract that, to say, no, I'm going to lay this down. I trust in God that he's got it. So Sabbath teaches me that my security is in him, not my job or anything else. And I'll be honest, that's immensely just like restful for my soul, you know, it just like releasing, kind of just freeing. But the the principle of Sabbath, it also teaches us that we need, it's not just about taking a day of rest a week, but it teaches us that we need to rest, not just one day a week, but to rest our whole selves in Him. So how do we do that? How do we rest our whole selves in Jesus? Well, if you think about it, when we rest on something, it takes our weight, okay? It takes our burdens, like you're sitting on this chair right now. It's taking your burdens. When we rest in Him, we rest in Him when we come to Him and cast all our burdens on Him. When we pour out our hearts to Him, when we share to Him how we're feeling and just quietly listen as He reminds us that we're His child, that He delights in us, that we're forgiven, and that one day we will meet in person. Amen. You know, that's where it comes from. And you know, that just takes the pressure off. Really takes the pressure off. You know, I don't have to, you know, please people. I don't have to do all this stuff. I can just rest in His presence. Just know He has me. He loves me. He's with me. He cares for me. He will never let me go. There's just such a restful place to be in. And I was talking to my wife, Elizabeth, recently about this. And she was saying, look, resting in Him, resting in Jesus, basically comes down to knowing in here, not just up here, but in here, what Jesus has done and what He thinks of you. Okay, He doesn't just love you, He also likes you. You know, sometimes we think, oh yeah, Jesus loves me. I'm not sure He likes me, if He'd like to hang out with me. But He does. He loves you and He likes you as well. You know, and it's when we know that in here, that really does something inside of us. And I know it has done for me. So just want to say, look, He loves you. You're following Him. You're His child. You're a Christian. He loves you. You're His child. And He will always take care of you. So let's feed on Jesus. Let's rest in Him, listen to Him, pray to Him, spend time in His community, because that will give you grace, but only enough for each day. And that is the only way our hearts will be transformed. And you know, when you feed on Jesus and rest in Him, your circumstances may not change, but everything will change, because you will change within. You will become sweeter in a sense. A couple of months ago, I went back home to Northern Ireland to see my family, and we went to church Sunday morning at my home church. And on Sunday afternoon, my wife Elizabeth and I, we went and visited a couple from my home church, Tommy and Irene. I haven't changed names. That's their real name. I don't think they're going to be bothered about this going online. Tommy is they're 80. Irene's 80. Tommy's 92. Okay, so Tommy is a farmer. He was a farmer his whole life. Obviously not doing it anymore. And Irene, she's been a farmer's wife her whole life. Really kept the house and everything. Very traditional couple. They've always went to my home church. And Tommy is actually can't go to church anymore. He's in a lot of pain. He's got a lot of illness. Irene has also had some pretty serious health problems too. I'm not going to share them, but like she's definitely been through the desert, okay, spiritually and physically. And it's really interesting when you go and visit them. They have this nice little living room, you know, get a little fireplace and TV and all that, you know, really traditional. And they've got these two seats, and the seats kind of face the TV. And in between the seats, there's this table. And on the table, you look at the table, it's their Bibles, like really well-read Bibles, you know, like really worn, and their Bible reading notes, these little books that they have that can help them read through the Bible. And then there'll be like a stack of CDs. They still get CDs. Yeah, they still do exist. Okay. And they get the CDs with the sermons from our local church on them every week because they can't attend the church anymore because they're just too ill and infirm. And it's just really interesting because you can just tell by looking at that table that here's two people who feed on and rest in Jesus every single day. You don't need to ask them. You just look at the table. You can see that. And Irene, she often writes this really lovely, encouraging letters, you know, about, oh, I hope things are going well in Manchester and we're praying for you and stuff. Really, really encouraging letters. And in these letters, you can just see, like, the sweetness of her faith through just years and years and years of feeding on Him every day and resting in Him and what He has done. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. But on that Sunday afternoon, just down the road, we went to, Elizabeth and I, we visited another lady just afterwards. This is my old Sunday school teacher from church. She too also still goes to my church back home. She's in her 70s. We were just chatting to her as well. She's called Kathleen. And in these last 2 years, she's been through the desert as well. She really has. So 2 years ago, her husband died. He was in his 70s, so it, you know, it's not like he was young, but it was cancer, but he died. And then her daughter lost two babies. They were long term, late term, kind of when you lose a baby. Miscarriage is the word. I just couldn't come to me. Yeah, late-term miscarriages. And her daughter's two sons, this lady's grandsons, who are one of them's four, one of them's eight, both basically in those 2 years had to have each of them had one of their legs amputated due to a rare genetic condition. So like I saw like a picture of them on Facebook, and there's these two little boys, one of them four, one of them eight, and they both have like a prosthetic limb each. Okay, so like she's gone through a lot. And she just said to me, you know, Andy, I was like, oh, how's that going for her? She was like, oh, you know what? Sports day is hard for those little boys. It's really hard for those little boys, you know? Two prosthetic legs. They want to run. They just can't run. And Elizabeth, and sometimes I think, like, situations like that, when it's grandkids, sometimes it's harder for grandparents because, like, they got to see the pain of their child and the pain of their grandchildren as well. And as Elizabeth and I, as we talked to her last Sunday, or not last Sunday, but you know, a few months ago on that afternoon, we were just, what struck us was just her faith was so vibrant and sweet. Like there wasn't a hint of bitterness despite what she'd gone through. And she just said, look, the Lord knows why we've had to go through this. And you know what? We trust in him. And you know, one day we may know, but we just keep trusting in him. And you know, when you know someone means what they're saying, you know, they're not just saying it, you know, it's the right thing to say. Like she genuinely means it. It was like that. And in the car on the way home, I just said to Elizabeth, I was like, wow. And like she was like saying the same thing to me. And I just thought, wow, what incredibly strong faith and love for the Lord that woman has. Like, what an inspiration. And Elizabeth said, you know, she says this. She said, when I'm in my 70s or 80s, I want to have that kind of trust in Jesus where just nothing can throw me. Okay, no matter what happens, nothing can throw me. And you know, when I look around CCM and all of our sites, really, CCM is a pretty young church. It's a pretty young church. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be great if young as in like most people are like under the age of like 40, by and large. But I was just thinking, wouldn't it be great if in like 40 or 50 years time, we would be these faith-filled saints inspiring the generations, inspiring younger generations to seek after God with everything we have. Wouldn't that be awesome? That'd be great. And faith like that comes from feeding on Jesus and resting in him while journeying through the desert. You know, life can sometimes feel like we're going through the desert. It can feel bitter, unfair even. And we can look at others and think, like, why does their life seem to go so well and not mine? That's the desert you're in. If that's what you're going through, that's the desert. And you know, none of us plan on going to the desert, but God meets us there in a way he never would have done if we were still in the garden. God leads us there to draw us to himself. And there's no other way for us to grow in trust and love, sadly. So he does stuff there. It's not a waste. And you know, you may not have a choice about going through the desert, but you do have a choice about how to respond to it. Grumbling and getting bitter, or grasping hold of Jesus and feeding on him and resting in him every single day. That's the choice we have. We have a choice in that.